Well, what we ought to do, then, we're not going to really get rolling here until...
Senate Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources, March 2nd, 1999, 3 o'clock p.m., hearing room C, State Capitol.
We're going to start with what we have. Afternoon. Joint meeting of the Senate Ag and Natural Resources Committee and Water Policy Committee. I'll come to order, please. We're expecting a few members to join us here briefly who are now excused. I want to review our agenda with members and with the public. Just kind of a rough roadmap how we hope to proceed this afternoon. We do have several bills up. The reason that we're meeting together jointly is to allow members of both committees an opportunity to review the progress to date on Senate Bill 423, groundwater. We're going to take that up after we've had a chance to hear some brief testimony and review briefly four other bills which are of mutual interest to both committees. Those are Senate Bill 154, Senate Bill 237, Senate Bill 261, and Senate Bill 262.
I think it's still
we may find some of the issues presented in those bills moot or addressed in other bills, and we may take action to table on one or more of the four bills I've just read. After we deal with those four, we'll take up the groundwater issue and probably spend a fair amount of time this afternoon reviewing the progress to date on the groundwater bill, Senate Bill 423. Then, after we've concluded that, the water policy members certainly are excused, as the Ag and Natural Resources Committee will go into work session on the three remaining bills on our agenda, Senate Bill 391, Senate Bill 354, and Senate Bill 264. However, as a first order of business, I'd like those members of the Ag and Natural Resources Committee to look at bills which we have for committee introduction today, and I'm going to ask our counsel, Mr. Green, to review those briefly with us, and then a motion would be ordered to introduce them with the requesters as identified.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Our staff is passing out the following four drafts at this time. LC 3418-4 is at the request of the City of Portland and proscribes the sale of laundry detergent containing phosphate. The request states from the City of Portland that banning the use of phosphates in laundry detergents, it is apparent that the use of phosphates in detergents contributes to the high level of phosphates appearing in Oregon's rivers. Tualatin River is the most recent example. This bill is being introduced at the request of the Association of Oregon Sewerage Agencies, and that will appear on top of the bill. Second bill, LC 3580, request of Bob Hall of Portland General Electric, defines residential customer to include persons who either directly or indirectly share in cost of energy service, allows the Public Utility Commission to approve additional cost-effective loan or payment of new owner of dwelling for which previous owner received loan or payment for energy conservation measures. The last two bills were at the request of the chairman through the committee staff, a battery bill. This bill is modeled after the National Battery Institute. It's a Washington, D.C. organization. I'm not sure I have the name correct. It's copied directly from their proposed nationwide legislation and encourages battery recycling and prohibits them from being disposed of in municipal solid waste landfills. That's 3560. And finally, LC 2622 increases the monthly fee essentially at Arlington. The reason for that, it was requested through Senator Bradbury and the committee. The reason for that is sort of a long story, but if you're aware, in November, resolution or proposition number 97B in Washington, 97A in Washington passed, which essentially the effect is sends $20 to $30 million per biennium of Oregon money to the state of Washington to fund their Superfund program. The reason is because they now tax oil that is refined in Washington and sent to Oregon, which essentially means that about $20 to $30 million of Oregon consumers will be paying to the Washington State Superfund program. This bill would raise a similar amount of money from largely from Washington hazardous waste producers that is being sent to Oregon. There is a provision in this for tax credit so that Oregon producers of hazardous waste would be able to get all or most of their money back. So it is directly aimed at importations of that waste. And 80% of the waste that goes to Arlington now is coming from the state of Washington. There are other states affected as well to a much smaller extent. Those are the four drafts, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any questions about those four drafts? Senator Bradbury?
Well, just a question. Have we already introduced the oil spill response plan bill? I don't think we introduced it at our last hearing, and I don't think it's on your list right now.
We had it in front of us at the last hearing. We may have.
We introduced two bills, if I remember correctly, at our last hearing.
Well, then we added we did one, actually, when we interrupted your testimony and did another one. I'm not sure that was the one. We did do three. We'll have to ask Lisa to check into that.
Well, yeah, just a concern, and that is that my recollection was today was the deadline.
That's correct.
So I would certainly appreciate it if we could check into it before today's meeting ended.
Correct. She should be doing that right now.
Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Senator Bradbury.
Is it appropriate to move the introduction of these bills?
Yes. Senator Bradbury has moved the introduction of the four LLC drafts 3418, 3580, 3560, and 2622 with the requesters as previously identified.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cairns.
Do we know the LC number of the other one that Senator Bradbury refers to?
I don't know where it is. I don't have it in front of me.
I said we're going to include that one in the motion.
Mr. Chair, we could certainly include it's without an LC number, but we do know that it's a bill relating to DEQ developing an oil spill response plan for the waters of the state.
And it was before us on Tuesday.
It was in our pile of bills.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if we may include that as the fifth draft conceptually. Though we don't have the number, we know the LC exists and it was before us, although not at this very moment. Any objection from the Ag and Natural Resources Committee members to that motion on those five bills for introduction? If not, they will be so introduced. Thank you. Okay, let's move now to the four bills that, other than 423, which relate generally to the subject of water or groundwater, and starting, if we may, with 154. We'll ask our staff, whichever staff desires, to just take a moment to review that bill with us, and then we'll proceed with testimony from those who asked to sign up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Jackie Greenleaf, the committee administrator for Senate Water Policy. Senate Bill 154 was a bill that Water Resources Department introduced as a concept fairly early on in the process, and they were looking to have the authority to declare a critical groundwater area by rule rather than as a contested case hearing, which it now is. As the SB 423, the groundwater bill developed, those provisions were also added into SB 423. So this bill at this point is superfluous, and as long as SB 423 passes with these provisions in it, the Water Resources Department would probably not be interested in pressing for its passage right now.
Okay. We have somebody here from Water Resources. Mr. Young, have we correctly stated the situation as it relates to 154?
Yes, sir.
Good. Okay.
Next bill.
We did have one individual, Mr. Pulliam, who wanted to speak to that bill. Is that gentleman here?
Yes, I am.
Are you satisfied with the information you've heard so far? We'll allow you an opportunity to speak on 423. It looks like 154 is sort of being going to be moved aside, but we'll give you that chance on 423. Anything else on 154? If not, let's move on then to the next, which would be 237, defines geothermal fluid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under current law, the Water Resources Department and the Water Resources Commission may regulate the impairment of or interference with existing water rights. However, the department's and the commission's authority does not extend to the regulation of the thermal characteristics of water. Senate Bill 237 would allow the Water Resources Department to regulate the alteration of thermal characteristics of water.
Okay, so we ask the representative of the Water Resources Department to come forward and tell us a little bit more about this measure and why it's here. Mr. Young, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, my name is Bill Young. I'm the director of the Water Resources Department. And as your staff has indicated, what this bill attempts to do is three or four things that specifically point to our ability to regulate the thermal characteristics of water. It defines what a geothermal fluid is. It makes it clear that we're allowed to regulate water use when junior users are altering water temperature in wells to the detriment of senior users who are relying on that water because of their thermal characteristics. It allows us to regulate thermal interference in addition to simple interference having to do with the quantity of water that is there amongst users, and allows us to control geothermal uses of water in a critical groundwater area. The Water Resources Department, Mr. Chairman, has authority over geothermal uses of water under 250 degrees Fahrenheit. From 250 degrees on down, it's viewed as a water resource. If geothermal resources go above 250 degrees, it's viewed as a mineral resource and is subject to regulation by the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. We are talking, in this case, those lower temperature waters below 250 degrees. It is clear under the prior appropriation doctrine that exists that we can regulate the quantity of water and deal with declining water supplies. However, we believe we do not have the authority to regulate senior and junior users to the benefit of the senior user when the problem is not one of depleting the supply of water that is there, but it is one of altering the thermal characteristics of that water. We believe that's an important addition to the authorities that we currently have. It allows us to protect the investment that water users may have made because of the thermal characteristics of the water. We have some examples of problems that have existed in the Vail and Ontario area, most notably. So it's a fairly straightforward bill, I think, that is intended to provide to our commission the additional authority to regulate under the prior appropriation doctrine users of water and to regulate it based on the impacts that can occur because of alterations of the thermal characteristics of the water.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Kintai.
Bill, what is the water being used for?
It's subject to a variety of uses, Mr. Chairman, Senator Kintai, depending on the area where you might be. In the Vail and Ontario area, some of the water there is used for a variety of purposes, including grain drying, including space heating, including the space heating of areas used for commercial purposes in that particular interest for the growing instance for the growing of mushrooms.
Okay. Senator Cairns, did you have a question? Pardon me.
How do I change the thermal characteristics? What do I do to it to change thermal characteristics? It's a nice term of art, but...
You might very well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Cairns, withdraw water, extract heat from it, re-inject that cooled water back into the ground, and if that were done in sufficient volumes, it might actually alter the temperatures that were there. And if you were a junior user, you might do that to the detriment of a senior user that was relying on certain temperatures of being available in that water.
Thank
conceivably
you.
The reverse could be true as well, but I've described the more typical circumstance.
So, Mr. Chairman, it's not a matter of adding to or subtracting from the water itself except for the degree.
It can be simply a matter of thermal alteration alone, that's right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Are there further questions for Mr. Young? If not, thank you. Mr. Pulliam, did you wish to testify on this bill? You're next. Please be sure to state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, Senators, my name is Ted Pulliam. I'm a water well drilling contractor in the Magnolia and Clackamas County area. I am also the legislative chairman for the Oregon Water Well Drilling Association. We have only a couple problems with this bill. Number one, we feel that a bottom temperature, the low end temperature, needs to be set on this bill. For an example, somewhere we have to put the value of water. Is it the drink that we're going to take, or is the value the fact that we're going to heat our house? There's nothing else that we have to drink but water. We can use other things to heat our homes, and there's electric, gas, you name them. They're all there. And in a scenario I can paint that could happen in my area as a water well drilling contractor, I could have an individual put a groundwater heat pump in his house and file and now get a geothermal right for that water at 56 or 58 degrees. And maybe he's adjacent to several large farms that are pumping 300 and 400 gallons a minute of water out of the ground, and not depleting the aquifer at all, but depleting the heat of the water. So consequently, the individual right that's heating his one house could theoretically shut down these farms that are employing hundreds of people. And so we feel that it would be important to put a temperature at the bottom end of this. Most domestic water is 54, 56, maybe 60 degrees. And if this 50 degree water was left alone and out of those rights, we feel that that would keep that from happening. And that was our only concerns.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you. Mr. Young, do you care to respond, or?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I indicated to Senator Cairns, our interest and our focus of direction, I think, was on the other end, where we were dealing with waters of a considerably higher temperature than that. I think perhaps what Mr. Pulliam says is true, that it would be conceivable, even in those nominal temperatures that one would talk about for normal groundwater temperatures, that it would be possible to alter thermal characteristics sufficiently that it would create a problem. I'm not aware personally of any particular instances where we've had where that's a problem, and if the committee wishes, we'd certainly be happy to reflect on whatever opportunities there are for removing that concern that's been expressed, or at least evaluating that concern. It's, I guess, not one that I'm immediately prepared to respond to, because I don't think it was part of the consideration we were making when we were looking at the bill.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cairns.
What is the bottom end? Is that the question you didn't want to respond to just right now?
It certainly is.
Okay, you'd be willing to work with Mr. Pulliam and his folks to
surely
sort of flesh out any amendment that not going to do damage to what you're trying to accomplish.
Surely.
It may resolve their concerns. Okay, I'd encourage you folks to feel free to huddle here at the next available opportunity and report back to us any progress you've made. We'll bring this back before the whole committee. Anyone else on 237? Didn't get a chance to sign up or testify. Okay, if not, we'll move on to the next one, 261, spring or seepage water. I could ask our Water Policy Committee person to just review that briefly with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill came as a result of problems that the Water Resources Department was having in regulating users of groundwater that comes from springs or seeps. Traditionally, these users have not been required to ask for a permit, which means that there is no priority date. If, as long as the water does not flow from one property onto another. The problem happens that when a property is divided and the property line changes, there are instances where then a junior user has begun to use water from the spring and has applied for a permit and has been able to enforce their right against people who have traditionally used the water from that spring. So in other words, that the older user has been cut out of the spring. use of the spring water. And that's why this bill was introduced.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Young, would you like to share any additional comments with us, please?
I'm not sure, Mr. Chairman. Bill Young from Water Resources again. Unless the committee members have particular questions, I think the description that Jackie has given is accurate. We do have a circumstance where, for whatever reasons, waters from a spring that arise and are used on the same property and from a spring that would not normally reach the property boundary historically have been exempt from the need to get a water right. That is the exception to surface waters, where typically water rights are required at all times. We've had a limited number, but a thorny a problem when someone applies or starts using that water, uses it for some period of time, property lines are realigned, all of a sudden the spring is not on the same property. It may not even be under the same ownership, although that individual may continue to use water. A new person comes in, files on the water right, and if the water becomes short, the question then is, how do we regulate that? And we believe that we're better off if indeed we simply required people to get a permit on that so we have evidence of the commencement of the water use and we're able to put it in its normal set of priorities that we would use for typical water distribution.
Senator Bunn.
Mr. Chairman, so then this puts you in the position of dealing with water that originates and ends on an individual's property in 100% of the cases because of a dispute, maybe 1% of the cases?
It certainly could, in very much the same way, I guess, Senator Bunn, that one could extract groundwater, for instance, from a well on a piece of property and apply it on that property. And if it were over a certain volume and above the exemptions in groundwater, we would have a current authorization to issue a permit there.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Bunn,
doesn't that groundwater usually extend well beyond that property?
It would.
The
answer, Mr. Bunn, is not in all or necessarily even a large number of cases. It wouldn't be unusual that the water might be extracted from a well and irrigated entirely on that same parcel of property, as an example.
Well, but the point is, with that well, if I have a well on my property, my use of that water also impacts my neighbors because I'm drawing from the same source that they are.
It certainly could.
Okay. My use of the seepage is not taking away from my neighbor's water supply in any way, is it?
No. Concern, as I've indicated, is in instances where we've discovered that all of a sudden property lines have changed, people who have been making use of that water no longer possess that property. The water is now being transported off the property. Other users appear. Sometimes they choose to apply for a water right, and then there is the confusion about the ability to protect that original senior user.
Senator
Bunn. Mr. Chairman, well, I understand the confusion and the desire, but it seems like we're making a policy change. Our policy now is that we're concerned about water that my use impacts my neighbor's use, upstream, downstream, or from the same water source in a well, and making a policy that says because of some future division, we're going to regulate water that has no impact on a neighbor or another user. Wholly within a piece of property. I think that's a very definite policy change.
Senator Bunn, it certainly is a change in the policy, and it is a change that in our view will accrue primarily to the protection of that senior user in those subsequent events when property lines are altered.
Senator Kintai.
Bill, how will this work then as far as junior and senior users with someone who previously did not have to have a right to use it because he didn't leave his property? Now, is he grandfathered in, or does he have to go down to apply now and then would be behind someone else?
Our sense is that for those circumstances that exist out there now, Senator Kintai, we're going to have to continue to try and thrash our way through them. We are concerned about creating more of these circumstances by the continued ability to develop that water without any evidence of the priority date of the use of the water.
But you would recognize prior use in establishing a date for that?
We would have to just thump our way through that as we've been doing historically for those existing uses, I presume, Senator.
Okay, further questions from Mr. Young? If not, thank you, Bill. No one had signed up to testify on this, but there might be some interest out there. Who wants to be first?
I'm going together.
Okay.
They always go together.
Yeah.
That pack and Blazers now.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kip Lombard, appearing on behalf of the Oregon Water Resources Congress. And with me also is Dave Nelson of OWRC. Our concerns in this bill, I think, really relate to those existing situations where the individuals have for years, as Senator Kintai pointed out, and as Senator Bunn pointed out, where individuals have, in fact, been operating under existing law, not obtaining a permit, using the spring waters on their own lands. And it may be prudent under this bill, before it moves forward, to make some transition provisions protect those individuals and to allow them some kind of priority to come in and file, because I can well imagine a rural situation where, in fact, there is a spring on Farmer A's property, but he doesn't get along with his neighbor, Farmer B, and Farmer B beats him to the water master's office to file on that spring. Now, of course, he can't appropriate from that spring because he can't trespass on Farmer A's property, but it can sure create a lot of hassle and problems, it seems to me, for the individual who historically has been appropriating on his own property. So we'd certainly be happy to work with the department to provide maybe some transition provisions here, but I think that would be prudent.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cairns.
I think, unlike Senator Bunn, the kind of questions he was asking, is this a solution in search of a problem? Or are there actually, is there somebody actually out there channelizing seepage and bringing it down into the point where he's done something, tiled or done something, and now he's got it coming down, he's got seepage coming out from that spring across the property line and is then, you know, piping it someplace and using it, and people squabble about this, and we need to change the law to
Senator
Cairns, deal with this?
Mr. Chair, I personally am not aware of any problem. I don't. Dave, are you?
Mr. Chair, for the record, Dave Nelson of the Water Resources Congress. I think that Mr. Young could probably give you more individual specific instances,
right,
but there aren't, there's not widespread problems that we're aware of.
I don't
of.
Read about it very often.
They don't complain to us about these if they exist very often. But I'm sure if they do complain, Mr. Young has heard them.
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Young, looks like you're back up here.
I guess I should have asked that of Mr. Young. You said you have a couple of thorny problems. Is this something that happens?
I apologize to the committee for not having brought over an example well written up that describes the problem. I can certainly do that for the committee. We have had cases that, and normally in the circumstances as described, I think, by Mr. Lombard, very frequently they are the result of disputes and squabbles, and water is just as convenient a thing to fight about as anything else. And we've had instances, I recall one in particular in the Douglas County area, where our water master eventually ended up trying to sort out the rights and wrongs of the water use under the direction of the circuit court. And I can bring that example and others into you as you return to this matter that would describe the circumstances we're dealing with. As I indicated, they are limited instances of problems, but they are difficult ones for us to deal with because of the lack of certainty about the relative priorities of the users.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Cairns.
One could expect that kind of behavior in Douglas County. The question is is this something that arises to the level of a statewide issue?
I'll search around, Mr. Chairman, if I could, for examples from Lane County and other places.
Oh, okay.
Touche. Senator Bunn.
Mr. Chairman, is this something that you have to deal with one topic a month, or is this twice a year, something like this comes up? How many cases do you have in a five-year period?
I couldn't put a quantification on that sentence. Frequently, when a case like this comes up and neighbors begin this kind of a tussle, and as was described, the dash to our front door to file water rights, it can create a substantial difficulty, and it can occupy a lot of time both for our water master in trying to simply distribute water in the field. We've had these cases that at least have threatened to go into our contested settings, as one person will protest the filing of a water right by another individual, and I can try and quantify that both in terms of not only specific examples but numbers.
Just if you were to guess, would you guess that you've had to deal with this 10 times in the last 10 years?
That might be not an inaccurate estimate. I don't know. I would think it might be something on that order, yeah.
Okay, that's close enough. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Young, to the point raised by Mr. Lombard and Mr. Nelson in terms of sort of addressing those folks for whom this is not a problem, which may be the vast majority of folks affected out there, and trying to provide an easy way for them not to get paced out.
Sure. We'd be happy to do that, and if we can invent with their help some way to build that process in, we'd be happy to do that.
Okay, appreciate that. Anyone else on 261? Okay, if not, thank you. Okay, the last on the short list of issues before we get to the groundwater bill is Senate Bill 262, and I believe our staff is going to advise us that the issue raised in that is now moot with the passage of Senate Bill 373.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Water Resources Department had submitted this bill, SB 262. What it does is it just says that is addressed, I believe, in Section 50 of the bill. Section 50 of your bill takes the existing statute under which the Water Resources Commission now acts, makes it a rulemaking activity, and pulls out some of the provisions that they now have and puts them into a brand new section of the law. That brand new section of the law is in Section 31. What Section 31 of your bill does, after the groundwater area has been defined, the boundaries have been declared by rule, if and when the Water Resources Commission decides they have to go in and regulate any individual groundwater user, that will still be done under a contested case proceeding. This has caused a lot of concern. People, I think, are afraid that by having the Water Resources Commission able to declare this area by rule, that somehow their individual rights will be affected. That's not the intent. They will still be able to go through a contested case hearing when it comes down to their individual use of the water.
Mr. Chair.
Excuse me, Senator Fawbush.
General, I'm sorry. I'm not keeping up with you. Would you explain that to me again and put that into context? Maybe I know we've had some problems establishing those areas in the past, I think, haven't we? And if I hear you correctly, are you saying that this is not going to be any solution to those problems that you've had in the past of establishing those critical areas? Did I hear that correctly?
Senator Fawbush, I think that depends on what you mean by establishing an area. Presumably, being able to draw the boundaries around the area by rule will be faster and less trouble than having to go through a contested case proceeding to establish the boundaries. But once those boundaries are established, then when it comes down to actually regulating individual groundwaters within that area, those will still be a contested case proceeding, and I imagine it still could take years.
So the change then is that you can now establish the boundary by rule where
right.
before you couldn't.
Right.
That's what I wanted to hear.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. Then the individuals can. But individually within that area, if you think you're not a problem, you can contest.
That's right. That's right.
Doesn't that put the individual at some disadvantage, if you've already drawn the line around the area? And
I believe that's a concern.
Yeah. Okay.
The third major area that's addressed in the bill is in well construction. Some of the original ideas that were discussed at the Subtle Lake Conference and that we also revisited again in our working group were whether or not to add so-called other holes to the current authority of the Water Resources Commission to regulate well construction. There were some proposed amendments that the working group eventually decided we were going to leave the bill fairly much as it is. And that's because if you change the definition of a well to include these other holes like elevator shafts or exploratory wells, and then some people were concerned that the Water Resources Commission might even get into regulating post holes, and some people were even concerned about plowing a field, whether that might, under some circumstances, become constructing a well. Now, the problem is, if you change the definition of a well, there exists already a fairly great mass of rules and case law discussing wells that depend on the existing definition of well. So if you tried to change that, you'd probably create a much larger mess than you really wanted to cope with. So pretty much the original proposals in the bill, which I think, I forgot what section it is now. Any rate, we did discuss that again in the working group and decided to leave the bill pretty much as it was, just because it seemed easier.
Senator Bunn.
Mr. Chairman, so then on page 22 where it talks about any hole through, well, 22, line 29, the only change made was in the dash 7 amendments to include the ability to prohibit the use of any hole. As it's worded now, if post hole remains a hole that is included, you can tell farmers to pull their posts out and fill them in, right?
Theoretically, I believe you could. I'm not sure that anybody really intends that to happen. And there again, the problem with including, making the definition of well so broad as to include any kind of hole that might be contributing to contamination could mess up other areas and rules and law, and there was no intention to do that. The real intent is just to make sure that, for instance, if a hole is determined to be contributing to the groundwater problems, that the Water Resources Commission can make the owner of that hole, go find the owner of that hole, and make them reconstruct it or cap it. And I suppose if it could be proved that a post hole were contributing to groundwater degradation, that scenario is possible.
So because it's difficult to define a well, we're just saying that we trust the judgment of the water group to be fair with everybody, and we'll just give a wide open definition.
Well, yes, I suppose you can say that we are going to rely on the Water Resources Commission to first make a determination whether or not the groundwater is being affected, and second, to decide on an appropriate course of action.
Thank you.
Okay. Is that it? Okay, further questions for our staff on the amendments to which they've spoken. We're going to hear briefly from, I believe, Mr. Pettit and or folks from the Department of Land Conservation and Development on the Dash 6 amendments. Okay, why don't you come up next? As they're coming forward, it would be the chair's recommendation that we consider adoption of the five sets of amendments in order that they may be printed and grossed, and then we would bring the bill back to the committee on the 7th when we talk about the funding issues, and that way we'll have hopefully a fairly together engrossed version of the bill to address.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Greg Pettit, groundwater quality coordinator with DEQ. If I might, I'd like to just go rapidly through the minor changes that we would be suggesting. And I have five amendment packages that I'm looking at, 423-2. Mm-hmm. We don't have all seven. I think earlier we talked about seven. I think
that was an error there. Okay. The series extends through seven, but there are actually five sets.
We have no changes to 423-2, no changes to 423-4. On 423-5, on the first page, line 13, we would suggest adding the word between laboratory and confirm when available. So it would read, have a certified laboratory, when available, confirm. The reason being is there's not always laboratory certifications for many of these analyses that we're talking about available. there's no certification process.
Okay.
That's the only change on that. The next on 423-6, these are the land use amendments that were suggested, and maybe at this point Jim Knight would like to go through those. I might just say that we discussed these amendments briefly and during the work group session, and there was a number of concepts introduced in these amendments that hadn't had an opportunity for a thorough public discussion and an evaluation of their implication. And so at this time, we're going to propose only a few of these amendments be adopted at the present time, and the rest we're going to drop. Jim?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay. Jim Knight for the Department of Land Conservation Development. As Greg indicated, we had some preliminary discussions, and some of the amendments that we proposed apparently the working group felt that they needed some more time to review or at least consider, and so we're today proposing some suggested changes to number six, which would require on page one, on line one, dropping the reference to the 110 deletion and adding a new provision. From line two to line 15 on page one, we would also be asking you to withdraw those proposed changes. We would, however, ask you at lines 16 to 21 to go with the proposed language with the only change.
Which set are we on?
Number six.
Six, Senator.
Six.
Thank you.
Let's take it from the top.
Once again. Okay. Line one, we would ask you to add a new provision, ORS 197-290. However, that's done. The reference to 110 we felt was inappropriate because it dealt just with specifically with comprehensive plans.
Yeah, the what they've done here is they've deleted the existing reference and changed it, but they haven't inserted the correct new reference. There should be something to replace 197-010.
Okay.
Second set of changes would be the withdrawal of the proposed amendments beginning at line 2 down through line 15.
Okay, so strike 2 through 15.
Mm-hmm. At line 16, what we're doing there is replacing all of F with the language beginning at line 18, so there would not be a new G. It would be still letter or item F. But the language that begins at line 18 and concludes at line 21 would be the same as you have it.
Okay.
Page 1, line 22, we would request the withdrawal of that change because that's just an internal consistency one there.
Okay.
Lines 23 and 24 similarly would be withdrawn.
Okay.
Page 2, beginning at line 1, we would ask you to retain the proposed change at line 33. And so part of DEQ has also asked us to do that as well. Okay. At line 4, I believe the citation 465 is inaccurate. It should be 855. So it would read 197.005 to 197.855.
Okay.
And then the language beginning at line 5 through 13 would remain as you have it.
Can you say it one more time, Mr. Kite? Mr. Knight, sorry.
What happened to 5 to 13?
5 through 13 would remain as shown.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay.
I might just say that we have kept changes in concepts or issues that were in the original proposal, and we have eliminated the amendments which would introduce new concepts into the bill that haven't had an opportunity to be reviewed and discussed.
Right.
Okay, any questions about the Dash 6 amendments as further suggested amendments or deletions by our witnesses?
Okay, and finally we have amendments to 423-7.
Okay.
On line 6, it currently reads, on page 4, line 2, delete the second A and insert the. And I believe what that should read is, to get the desired effect, is delete the, should read, on page 4, line 2, delete the first the and insert A. The reason for this change is so that a member of this group can be from a from a water supplier who has a source of groundwater as their supply, not the. I think the intent there is to open up the door for cities like Portland who have a combination of both surface and groundwater supplies. And this would accomplish that. The next change would be on line 16. It should read, means a maximum contaminant level. It currently reads, maximum containment level.
Okay, contaminant or containment.
Mm-hmm. Next change is on the second page, line 9. Should read, in an area of groundwater concern or a groundwater management area, since we've changed the name of emergency area to groundwater management area.
Groundwater management area. Okay.
Correct. On page 3, there's an proposed amendment here that says on line 5, after prevent, insert any additional. And the amendment suggested on 423-5, there's a change there which says after prevent, insert,
says for the use, I believe it is what, if I can read my writing here.
So we have two amendments that are suggesting different things in the same place there. That will need to be corrected. Doesn't really matter which one we use to us. On page 4, line 16, should read, after declaration of a groundwater management area rather than an emergency groundwater area.
Okay.
On line 26, at the end of the line there, there should be a comma after enforce. And that's all the corrections I have.
Okay. Ms. Holman, do you want to tell us your recommendation in terms of how we resolve that inconsistency between the Dash 7 and the Dash 5 amendments, which was referenced a few moments ago?
Let me have a chance to figure it out.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, while she's doing that, can I ask a procedural question?
Sure.
I have to admit that I feel overwhelmed by paper, and I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to track the issue with the amendment. When we get down to these, is it going to be possible that somebody could restate what the concept and what the issue is in these things so that we can, hopefully we can vote on those and not the A's and the N's and the the's and commas?
Well, probably we have to do both.
Okay.
I think there was some effort to
try to... Are they mutually exclusive? Or can we pass all of them? Are there conflicts that we have to deal with?
There are not conflicts,
okay,
to my understanding, in the way the amendments were presented in sequence.
Okay, except the one...
With one exception that we've asked Ms. Holman to address.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Bunn.
Did I understand right that all of the groups involved support all of the amendments proposed?
Well, we think we're just about there. Those folks are going to have an opportunity to comment next. There has not been a lot of discussion on the Dash 6 amendments, and that's why some of those were stricken. If you have a question about the Dash 6 amendments, I'm sure Mr. Knight would be glad to respond. Why don't you come forward maybe for a moment, Mr. Knight? You could maybe address the substantive issue presented and the extent to which other members of the working group have had a chance to respond to the amendments as further amended by your deletions or corrections.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The change we proposed on page 1 of number 6, beginning at line 18, we believe is a technical correction to identify the appropriate process for the required changing of a comprehensive plan if deemed necessary to address identified groundwater concern. The process that the original bill referenced is the plan amendment process, which is frankly a discretionary process that local government has the option to undertake those changes or not. We believe that the intent of the bill was to identify the mandatory periodic review process, which is the manner by which changes can be required by the Land Conservation Development Commission at the request of a state agency.
Okay, that's helpful to me. Were there any follow-up questions on that point? No. Okay, and as far as Section 34A,
okay, the
page 2.
Essentially, this clarifies the instruction to the commission, the Land Conservation Development Commission, to take steps if necessary to assure that acknowledged city and county comprehensive plans as well as state agency coordination programs be made consistent with the overall goal of this act. And the sub 2 under 34A directs the department, my agency, to take steps as necessary to assure that information in comprehensive plans today that relates to groundwater is provided to or forwarded to SWMG's overall state repository for groundwater information.
Okay. Any follow-up questions on that point? Any further questions for Mr. Knight on the Dash 6 amendments? And Ms. Holman, are you going to make a suggestion here to try to reconcile an issue between the Dash 5 and Dash 7 amendments?
Mr. Chair, Jeanette Holman, Legislative Council. The difference is very minor. I would recommend using the language in 423-5, which uses the word further, rather than any additional. That's the only difference. One uses prevent further contamination. One says prevent any additional contamination. And further seems shorter to me.
Okay, so
fewer letters in our statutes. We want to keep them as short as possible.
Okay, so we would be going with the language on line 1, page 2 of the Dash 5 amendments.
Correct.
As opposed to the language found at line 5, page 3, any additional. That would be further is what's
right.
Recommended.
Correct. I have a couple concerns about the changes in Dash 6.
Okay, why don't you speak to those now if you wish.
On the change to insert 197.290 on line 1 of page 1 of those amendments, 197.290 does not exist, which is why it's not in there. The language, I think, if I recall, I don't have what was given to me, but if I recall what LCDC or DLCD proposed to do was to insert as 197.290 the new language that is given on page 230 as section 34A. We assign the numbers in the editing process after session is over, so I didn't assign the number in the bill, and I think that's what their concern is. The other concern I would have is a very, very technical concern, and that's in line 4 of page 2 of the amendments, where the change was recommended to 855. In our drafting techniques, we insert in the smallest possible series that we can, and that's what 465 represents. Just narrows the scope. Very technical. Sorry about that, but...
Nope. I tell you what, I think that lies within the discretion of council.
Thank
in
you.
Terms of how these things
okay.
are numbered.
I just didn't
I don't
want
think
you
it
to
addresses.
Adopt something and then
okay. Okay.
to worry about changing it.
Okay. We're going to rely upon you to make the proper numerical notations or statutory references.
Okay. That's the only changes I had or concerns.
Okay. Thank you. Those are the amendments.
Excuse me, yeah. A couple by the audience, a couple of other changes pointed out, if I might.
Okay.
If I have your permission, thank you. Greg Pettit again with DEQ. There was, the committee changed in several places where we talked about management practices, and one of the amendments we have now, the amendments that were submitted by Mr. Blosser, he added management practices one place, and we suggested for consistency there that we talk about best practicable management practices and add the word practical and practicable in front of management. That's consistent with the changes that were made elsewhere. That is on
amendments
423-5.
Okay, the dash 5 amendments, your recommendation again is?
Is to insert the word practicable in front of management practices. So I'd read best practicable management practices.
Okay.
That is a concern that various agricultural interests have brought up, and we have no objection to that change. And then the other correction is, I don't see it here in front of me right now, but it's in the, yeah, here it is, 423-7. It currently reads under the State Drinking Water Act. That should read under the Safe Drinking Water Act.
Where?
On line 16.
Safe Drinking Water Act?
Correct.
Okay, last word, line 16, page 1 of the dash 7 amendments.
That's it. Thank you.
Okay. That's truly it. Probably a miracle, but we're moving right along. Okay, I want to, we sort of all digest those. We want to hear, I believe at this point, from is it Dr. James Witt from Oregon State University, who I believe may have some comments to share with us on this subject generally, and we appreciate your patience. And
thank you.
My name is James Witt. I'm a faculty member at Oregon State University, and I was asked by the committee to come and present some information that would help explain or show the nature and extent of pesticide in groundwater problem. Then Laban is going to help me show some slides, I believe. Last time I presented this talk a month ago to Oregon Weed Society, it was 75 minutes. I think I've managed to cut it down to about 15 for this committee.
Thank you.
I think you should have distributed what we call hard copies of the slides. Do you folks have these? Yeah.
Yes, we do.
And I think you'll be able to follow along looking at the written material. The first two pages I do not have in the slides. These are not so much about pesticides in groundwater, but I learned that there was some confusion in the sense that there's a lot of discussion about MCLs, RMCLs, MCLGs, and HAs, and all these acronyms that have to do with setting of standards. I simply tried to lay these out on that first page in a way that shows the way the process goes in getting those standards, and we can come back and discuss that if you have questions later. The second page gives you definitions of those standards. This is simply to help you find your way if you need to in the jungle of acronyms and what they mean. Now, Dan is going to have to run the slides for me, and we'll proceed along as rapidly as we can here.
Okay, we'll sort of adjust the lights here in a moment.
That's not my slide. Anybody have audio visual training?
It's nice dust. It's soiled.
We may have to do this without slides.
There's an amoeba.
There we go. Well, that slides in backwards. I hope the rest of them aren't. Okay, there's our first slide. Previous slide was just our logo slide, and remind you that there's a basketball game on tonight, and be sure to catch it. This slide is to set a perspective on the problem of chemicals in groundwater, in that when we have a program to examine the problem of pesticides in groundwater, one can focus so intently on the problem you're looking at, pesticides in groundwater, it's easy to forget that that's one of many problems of pesticides coming to groundwater. Some of the others I've listed above there. We have industrial waste impoundments, gasoline and pipeline storage. Oh, we switched a little too soon there, Dan. We have toxic chemical disposal sites. There are others that I haven't listed. Various kinds of sewage impoundments, the solid waste disposal sites, municipal garbage dumps, if you will, all of these in their way can contribute to the problem of chemicals reaching groundwater. The pesticides should be remembered as one of several problems. The lower part of the slide gives a perspective, a very simple perspective of the chemicals that are used in farming, the non-point source. And these are figures from California, the average use that they calculated there, that per acre, per year, there's about 140 pounds of nitrogen fertilizer, 42 pounds of phosphorus fertilizer, 10 million pounds of water, which is important, of course, in that that's what takes these things to groundwater. Too low on the screen for you to see is 3 pounds of pesticides per acre per year. We can have the next slide, Dan. Give ourselves a perspective of, we want to look at both the national and the local perspective on this.